I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network, and it's time this Monday at 1 o'clock for all things political. The bulk of our show will be the week that was. Last week, what a week it was. Carl Bernstein has said, and he is, of course, of Watergate fame, it's appropriate for the media to address Trump's stability and fitness for office. This is more dangerous, he said, than Watergate. Collusion with a hostile power, a possibility, and the president is keeping us from knowing the facts. We will be talking about that. Lindsey Graham and Chuck Schumer have said that if Donald Trump has tapes, they ask them to be turned over for review. We're going to be talking about the faith that the American people have in the Trump presidency. The poll numbers that have come out recently are not very good for the president. Michael Kinsley, though, has said, and this is a good question to ask you this hour, is there anything good to say about this administration? Is it possible that the president has done or said anything good during his campaign in the first months of his presidency? We'll ask you that question this hour of the program, because there are people among his core supporters who still adhere to him and his philosophy and believe what he says. Is he an authoritarian leader? Is he just a man with thin skin? And are we in trouble in this country is really the question of the hour after all that happened last week. We will be welcoming your phone calls. Our guest this hour is Bob Franken. Bob has Wisconsin ties, had his first broadcasting job in Wisconsin, is a graduate of the University of Wisconsin-Madison. He's a syndicated columnist specializing in political analysis, a political contributor for MSNBC, was with CNN for a long time. He's done a lot of foreign corresponding for the Iraq War, where he was embedded. He's covered many presidencies, and he is our guest this hour. We'll be welcoming phone calls for Bob. The number is 800-486-8655. Are our institutions under assault? Are you worried about the direction of the country? Do you have faith in the president? Do you think that he has done some good things during the course of his month in office? Here's our phone number for you to join the conversation. I anticipate we'll have lots of calls this hour. Our number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. We are on Twitter at K Dunn Show. Bob Franken, hello. Thanks very much for being with us.
Well, hi.
Hi.
Again, I asked the question, whatever will we talk about?
I know. What an incredible week it was. I mean, my gosh.
I mean, among reporters, Donald Trump is considered the gift that keeps on giving.
Yeah, I'm sure.
We do not have a slow news day. At least we don't have a slow news night when he reaches for Twitter. The hits keep on coming, as the cynics say, yeah.
Well, we're now getting people who are saying pretty remarkable things. Carl Bernstein, who covered, of course, for the Post Watergate, he said it is appropriate for the media to address Trump's stability and fitness for office. He talks about how important this issue is and that in many ways it's more serious than Watergate. Do you share his perception, Bob?
I do, oftentimes I would consider that hyperbole, but in this particular case, first of all, the stability and mental ability to maintain the high standards of a presidency are covered in the 25th Amendment of the Constitution. If they would go through the arduous process of convincing the various people, the various institutions, that Donald Trump was unfit to serve, he could be at least suspended from office. Hmm. And that was done because of physical disability, but of course it could involve mental disability also. And what Carl Bernstein also said, which you quoted just a moment ago, is that this is more dangerous than Watergate. I do agree with that. And the reason is that Watergate happened in a different time. There were certain constraints of civility that have long since disintegrated in the United States. It was before social media. And Richard Nixon was as crazy as a loon. But the question is Donald Trump also, with that 40-year period or whatever it is, with all the disintegration of any sort of political protocols that kind of thing. So, yes, I think that we're in greater danger than we were during the Nixon period. Mm.
There was an interesting piece in the Post today. I don't know. I think it was in The Fix. And the author of the piece said that damaging the credibility and faith in institutions in this country, the judiciary, the electoral system, the president has damaged our faith in the institutions. And so people in those institutions are reluctant to challenge him, and the base will look to him as the only one who can save them, the only real truth coming from him.
Yes, I believe that that's the case. First of all, he has a base that adores him. And that base, to put the most positive spin on it, is there for a valid reason. Donald Trump has been able to demagogue the issue that a huge number of Americans have been left out. They have been overtaken by a variety of forces, including the stratification of wealth in this country and, of course, racial progress. And that has meant that a whole lot of disgruntled whites feel that their rights have been taken away. And so they are attracted to somebody like a Donald Trump. Bernie Sanders had the same kind of appeal, but of course from a totally different direction. So that is where we start. And those people just love the fact that Donald Trump is, in their minds, just shaking up the establishment. Unfortunately, what he is doing is he's blowing everything up that he touches right now.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything that he's done that is good?
Well, I think that I was afraid that you were going to answer that question, ask me that question, and my mind was racing. What do I say? But I think that I just talked about it. He has brought into question the real calcified system that we have in this country, where people, the normal people, people without means, are treated unfairly. The people who have means, that is to say the wealthy people, are treated more than fairly. The laws are stacked in their favor, etc. The unfortunate thing is that Donald Trump is totally, from every point of view, totally unqualified to do anything about it, and as a matter of fact, has put any number of people in his administration who are people who have created this system.
Let's talk about the tapes for a moment. Lindsey Graham and Chuck Schumer have asked for the tapes to be turned over for review if there are tapes. Do you think he has tapes, and would they still be around if indeed he has, and can the Senate get a hold of them?
Well, among the questions that I suspect that we're going to talk about is obstruction of justice. If he knowingly destroyed tapes that he had that might be evidence in this investigation, whether it's a congressional investigation or a federal agent's investigation, that would clearly be obstruction of justice. And we can talk about that more in a moment. So the question is, does he have tapes? He has a history, apparently, of recording people in his office and telephone conversations, which, by the way, New York State is one of those states that is considered a one-party state. That is to say, only one party for a phone conversation, for instance, must know that he's being recorded. There are also certain two-party states, Maryland being one, for instance. But in any case, it's entirely possible, if his history is taken into account, that he does have the tapes. Would he be forced to turn them over under a subpoena? That kind of thing? The Supreme Court has already decided that. Yes, he would be forced to turn them over.
Would we ever know if they had been destroyed?
There are ways of finding these things out. It's really hard to keep a secret. How would they be destroyed? Would he do it personally? Would people be forced to testify about whether they participated in the destruction? That kind of thing. I think that there's every way to find out whether the tapes had been destroyed.
There was a news report today that the Senate GOP is edging back from the president, that they're worried that he's volatile, that he's becoming unpopular, and that they are trying to carry on with their own agenda, health care, taxes, et cetera, with evidently very little input from the White House at this point. And also must be pretty darn worried, Bob, about what's going to happen to some jobs, particularly in the House next year.
Well, there is quite a bit of worry about that, but there has been worry about that ever since Donald Trump became the party nominee. And so far, he's defied those expectations and, of course, got elected, which surprised the daylights out of an awful lot of people.
Right.
Now, the Senate has always been, in fairness, has always been really independent. And when the House, for instance, passed the health care legislation and it came over to the Senate, it was made very, very clear, and this was pre-Comey a couple of weeks ago, back in history, that the Senate would, in fact, create its own health care legislation, which probably would not resemble what the House had concocted along with the assistance of the Trump White House. So the Senate is always independent. In private conversations, I will tell you that everybody is, the one bipartisan agreement we have in this town is that everybody is horrified by Donald Trump. He has millions of Americans who, as I said, love the fact that he's shaking up the establishment, but these are people who are not necessarily thinking of the destruction that he's causing.
Mm-hmm. Are they going to be able to move ahead with health care legislation, with tax legislation, anything the Republicans, they have control, total control, would love to take this moment in history to do some radical things or things that they've been hoping for years?
Well, of course, the Senate does have a variety of ways to make things move slowly. It prides itself on being a very deliberative body. They've gotten rid of a few of them, specifically the filibuster. But Donald Trump always gums up the work. One would think, as you just said, that now that the Republicans have control of just about all the branches of government, including, of course, the Supreme Court now, that they would be able to, in fact, have a straight line to getting their various visions passed. But you have a President Trump who is completely unpredictable and that any moment is going to cause a huge explosion like he did last week.
Mm-hmm. Why do Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan stick with him?
I don't think they have any choice. It's not like they can say, no, we need to get somebody else. Donald Trump is President of the United States. He is also now the leader of their party. So they sort of have to go along with them. They just can't really part with them.
Why do you think he fired Comey?
Why he thinks he fired Comey?
Why do you think Trump did?
Because he probably was somebody he couldn't control, and that Comey, who it can be really sanctimonious and all of this kind of thing, did not want to be viewed as somebody who had been intimidated out of fully investigating these very serious charges against Donald Trump. And so I think that Donald Trump concluded, from his perspective, that this is not somebody who I can intimidate. This is somebody who might, in fact, come up with results that I can't possibly have or tolerate. And so he fired Jim Comey, thinking that the Democrats would support that, making the huge mistake of thinking that the Democrats would support it, because the Democrats were mad at the way that Comey had handled the investigations into Hillary Clinton.
Mm-hmm. It is pretty amazing that he would think he didn't do his political calculation very well, did he? That of course the Democrats will support this. I don't think so.
No. Of course, the Democrats are just laying in wait for him. But the Democrats, the wise Democrats, just sort of wait for Trump to shoot himself in the foot.
Mm. Yeah, I guess you have to ask the question, though. We've been through so many things with this president, so many statements, so many criticisms of people who are from Mexico, really incredible statements about women and grabbing women, and the list goes on and on. So what's new about last week? So what?
Well, as a matter of fact, there are people who suggest that that's exactly what should happen. So what? Because he always manages to escape, and there's always some other news that overtakes it. Sometimes Donald Trump with another even worse self-inflicted wound. For instance, he's about to undertake his first foreign trip.
Right.
He's going to be talking to the Saudis, etc. And will the news of that overtake the Jim Comey news? The other part of the argument, however, is that there's kind of a cumulative effect. And you get to the point where somebody finally decides, after there's the accumulation of so much stuff, so to speak, that he truly is unfit to continue in the office as president.
Hmm. And then what would happen? Mike Pence becomes president?
Mike Pence would become president, yes.
Hmm.
And a lot of people think that Mike Pence are horrified by the idea of Mike Pence, particularly those who consider him to be, in effect, a theocrat, somebody who is ultra-conservative. But what they don't normally say about Mike Pence is that he's crazy.
Right.
And they do say that about Donald Trump.
Mm. So is the president going to meet with the Pope?
he's going to meet with the Pope, and the Pope is, in effect, setting him up. He's saying he's not going to argue with the man. He's going to just sit and listen respectfully to the President of the United States. The Pope is a very, very, very worthwhile adversary, and I suspect that President Trump is going to be treating him very gently, and they're going to have a very gentle conversation.
And are these rumors true that Newt Gingrich's wife, whose name escapes me at the moment, I'm sorry, is she going to be the ambassador to the Vatican?
Well, apparently so. I mean, what a remarkable occurrence. Gingrich's qualification for the job is she's a devout Catholic. That's it. And, of course, she's the wife of Newt Gingrich, who, of course, in his time has been has had a totally corrosive effect on the United States and its institutions of government. He sort of created the atmosphere. He's considered the man who created the atmosphere that has sort of become as toxic as it is today. Newt Gingrich, of course, is somebody who whispers. He's the Trump whisperer these days. So maybe this is his reward. He gets to live in Rome with his wife, the ambassador.
We're welcoming phone calls. Bob Franken is our guest this hour. We're talking about last week, and we're just into this week. Who knows what will be going on this week? But last week was a week worth talking about. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. Bob Franken is a syndicated columnist. He specializes in political news. He knows foreign news as well because he was a longtime correspondent for CNN, has covered the Iraq wars, has covered many presidencies, and is a graduate of UW-Madison. 800-486-8655 is the number. I can't believe we're at this point, but there are a number of people, prominent commentators, people who have been breaking very big news stories in recent American history who are saying this president is unfit for office. Do you think that's a little too wild? Is that going too far? Do you agree with that? Can you think of good things that he has done? And there are many people who still support him, although the number of people who approve of what he's doing is going down, and there are some Republicans who are standing back a little bit from him. We're interested in your thoughts, and we'll take them momentarily.
This is a potentially more dangerous situation than Watergate, and we're at a very dangerous moment. And that's because we are looking at the possibility that the President of the United States and those around him during an election campaign colluded with a hostile foreign power to undermine the basis of our democracy, free elections. We don't know the facts, but what we do know is that the President of the United States seems to be doing everything in his power to keep us from knowing the facts, including firing the director of the FBI because, says the President of the United States, of, quote, this Russia thing. So the question of a cover-up seems to me to have been answered a while ago. There is a cover-up going on to keep us from knowing what happened here. Whether that means the President of the United States obstructed justice or not, or those around him did, we don't know. But what we see is that at every turn, this president is impeding the ability of those who were chosen to investigate to do so, including the House and Senate committees. It's a truly dangerous moment. It's very different than Watergate.
All Things Political, Bob Franken, our guest this hour. Ed in Appleton is our first caller. Hi, Ed.
Yes, wondering if your guest, Mr. Franken, has had the opportunity to read Kenneth Starr, a Watergate fame, editorial in the Wall Street Journal from today, and if he has comments.
I haven't read it. Can you tell us what's in it? Ed, I haven't read it either.
As Kenneth Starr has indicated that the firing of Comey was perfectly justified, and he outlines the, I don't remember the other attorney general, the assistant attorney general's name, but he outlines and goes through the his letter to Sessions and says that given the whole situation, that Comey absolutely should have been fired.
Given what, the situation with Hillary?
No, Comey made a number of errors over the last 6 months, and it was not possible to have the FBI be respected with Comey as the leader.
What do you think about what Donald Trump said, though, when he talked about the Russia thing?
I have concerns about the Russia thing, but I think what they're saying is that despite that, with Comey's handling of the FBI as the director in the last 6 months, last 8 months, that he really had to go.
Mm-hmm. Bob.
Well, as a matter of fact, I have long experience with Ken Starr, having covered all his Whitewater investigations and the Monica Lewinsky investigations. And he is a very thoughtful conservative. And there is a very thoughtful point of view that I would say suggest that, in fact, there was good reason to fire Jim Comey, that he really botched up the election at the end of things by messing up the Hillary Clinton investigation in a variety of ways, violating the procedures in very self-serving ways, that kind of thing, going against policy and all of that. And Jim Rosenstein, who is the person that you're talking about, was somebody who also has a good reputation. He had been the U.S. attorney in Maryland, and he was now deputy attorney general and was asked to come up with a bill of particulars, in effect. It's almost like the letter that you write to the Human Resources Department when you're going to let somebody go and you know that you're going to get some flack for it. So he was asked to create this memo, which was that kind of letter, something, a piece of paper for the record, so to speak. And then Donald Trump claimed that that was what he was using as a basis to get rid of Jim Comey. The fact of the matter is, in addition to that, the President of the United States does have the power to fire the director of the FBI, who, of course, has a 10-year term. But the President maintains that power to fire him. So I suspect what Ken Starr is saying is that the President did have the right and should have fired Jim Comey because he had so badly botched up the investigation. However, now we have the, quote, Russia thing,
right,
quoting, of course, Donald Trump, which is that we're in the middle of an investigation over the possibility that the Trump campaign, and by the way, maybe Trump himself, had colluded with the Russians to influence the United States election, which would be horrifying if it turned out to be true. That is a criminal investigation, and now it is turning out that Donald Trump was not relying on that memo from Jim Rosenstein, but was rather relying on his instincts and being motivated by this investigation against Donald Trump and his people.
Mm-hmm. Do you think we're ever, through the FBI investigation, or I'm not sure where else we would find it, Senate or maybe the House, are we going to come to a conclusion here? Are we going to know if there was collusion?
Well, I think we're going to know what investigators say. The question is, which investigators?
Right.
Much is going to depend on who is appointed to head the FBI. Is the person who's going to be appointed to head the FBI going to go in there, appointed, by the way, by Donald Trump and mm-hmm. confirmed by the Senate, of course. But is that person going to go in there and suddenly take back all the resources that are needed for such an important investigation? Is there going to be a special prosecutor appointed? Who would appoint that special prosecutor? Is there going to be a valid congressional investigation, knowing that Congress, either the Senate or the House, are both controlled by the Republicans? If your question is, are we going to ever really know? There is a reasons why we might not really know. But, of course, there would be huge political pressure, as there was, for instance, in Watergate, to make sure that there's an honorable investigation. Do I think that they're going to finally know whether there was collusion? Yes. But the question is, how high up did it go?
Mm-hmm. And what about the press? Not only U.S. press, international press. Are there places that are really on this story? And if so, what are those places, Bob?
Oh, I think just about any credible news organization is really spending an awful lot of resources investigating all this. And many of the disclosures have come through the news media. And, of course, that might help explain Donald Trump's huge antagonism toward the media.
Let's go to Paul in Madison next. Hi, Paul.
Hi. Hello.
Hi, Paul.
Yes. I guess I'd have to say I'm a little bit surprised and also concerned regarding I mean, there are a lot of things happening with Donald Trump, of course, in so many different fronts, and it's hard to focus in on what the issue is. And I think many of us would agree that as a pattern, we're all very, very concerned that he can functionally be a good president. But the problem is that you can't remove a person from office like that for just kind of a pattern of many, many things. There has to be one thing in particular that would have to rise to the level of serious consideration for removal from office. Of all of the things that we've had happen, and I'm concerned that we're going to get more or less, we're not going to get distracted per se by the Russian investigation, but we've also got what we've had in the last week has been this issue of obstruction of justice. And that, of course, is what brought down Richard Nixon. And he's come out and said in his own interview with Lester Holt that this Russia thing, this Trump and Russia thing, played into his decision for removing James Comey. Mm-hmm. And it's hard for me to think forward, if we allow this precedent to take place, that what appears to be a very bald-faced attempt to obstruct an investigation into his activity, if we let this go, what are we going to let go in the future?
Yeah.
When do we step in on a president?
That's a good question. And I've heard some say, yes, it is obstruction of justice, and many other respectable people say it isn't, Bob.
I'm one of those disrespectable people who would argue that it is not, in fact, obstruction of justice, or that it could be proven to be obstruction of justice. Obstruction of justice relies heavily on intent. The best description I've been given that I read somewhere was, it is not against the law, under any circumstances, against the law, to throw your computer into the river, unless you know that it contains material that would be material to an investigation. Hmm. So the question would be, was it Donald Trump's intent to, in fact, obstruct the investigation into collusion with the Russians, et cetera, by firing Jim Comey? You'd have to say that that certainly entered into his thinking, because he considers, quote, the Russia thing, totally invalid, or at least he says it does. He says that is nothing more than sour grapes on the part of the Democrats. So the question is, would it meet the legal standards of obstruction of justice? I don't think so. However, when it comes to impeachment, which is what we're really talking about here, you don't really need to have a specific provable crime. What you have to have is high crimes and misdemeanors, okay? And that is an entirely subjective thing. That is a political standard. If, however, this Hall of Horrors continues, and we continue to see revelations come out about Donald Trump's conduct and all this kind of thing, I could see where there would be a political groundswell that could end in impeachment.
Mm. Thanks, Paul, so much for your call. We have a line open if you'd like to join us for all things political. The number is 800-486-8655. Mike in West Dallas, hi.
Hi. Just speaking as somebody who is under 30 and a more millennial, I am concerned about the direction of the country, not only because he's pursuing policies that have been proven, or not necessarily proven, but has seemed not to work, the deregulating of business, but also the question of Trump's character. Like, how would he handle a collapse like 2007? Let's say a collapse occurred like in 2007, the United States housing market. How would somebody with his temperament be able to handle something like that? And that's my greatest concern, more than any other concern with Trump.
Well, I suspect, by the way, the shape of the country, the deterioration of the country has happened long before Donald Trump, and has spanned many and many administrations, and has spanned at least a couple of generations, actually. Somebody needs to come along and start the process of healing the country. We've had these discussions any number of times, certainly on this program, Kathleen.
Right.
The question really is, how would Donald Trump handle a real crisis? That is to say, if North Korea, for instance, decides to invade South Korea, if Russia does an invasion and tries to grab more land in Eastern Europe, that kind of thing, how would Donald Trump handle that? And there are serious questions that he would have the mental stamina or the quality of people in his administration to really do the job. Let's not forget that there still many, many vacancies in key parts of the administration. Say what you will about Barack Obama. He did come in, he did inherit a collapse of the economy. And he was able to very methodically and over a great period of time in a bipartisan way turn things around. The question is, would Donald Trump have the wherewithal and the people in place to do that? And many people fear that the answer would be no, that crisis would pretty much do the country in.
Mm. Why is he setting up this, and how many people are going to be on it? How extensive is it going to be? Trump has been told again and again and again that these ideas that he had, that millions of people voted illegally in the last election and probably cost him the popular vote. Now he's putting together a commission to look at millions of illegal votes. Everybody says it didn't happen.
Now he's putting together a commission. So why is he putting together a commission? Because he can. He's president of the United States. He can do whatever he wants. Unfortunately, he seems to get his information from talk radio and by watching Fox News and the other networks.
More phone calls. Whenever you'd like to join us, our number is 800-486-8655. And let's go to Brooke in Madison. Hello, Brooke.
Hi. So I'll just start off by saying that there are just way too many things that I want to talk about with Trump. But I guess since you guys are focusing on what happened in the past week with Comey, I'll just talk about that. But during the campaign, I did agree. Like, I thought to myself, that guy needs to be fired for what he did to basically mess up Hillary's campaign by publicly speaking about that investigation again. I was so upset, and I said, you know, they need to fire him. But what is really concerning and upsetting to me is just that Trump's next replacement, I mean, don't you guys just already know that whoever he appoints is not going to continue that Russia investigation?
Well,
so that's what
I don't know what he's going to do. What are you hearing, Bob?
Well, I'm hearing that he's interviewing people left and right, and among them are politicians like John Cornyn, who is the number two guy in the Senate, Republican in the mm-hmm. Senate, and Mike Rogers, who's the former chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, et cetera, et cetera. There is also a backlash from that, people saying that you should not have somebody who has a political background, that this must be somebody who is all above that and is clearly above that. The thing to note is that the FBI director will have to be approved by the Senate. And if it's any sort of person who in any way is suspected of going in and, in effect, sabotaging the investigation into, quote, the Russia thing, I don't think that they're going to pass the Senate. This person is going to pass the Senate. I don't even think that there are going to be that many Republican votes.
Hmm. Do you have any suggestions of who you think it should be?
None that the president would listen to.
Mm-hmm. More phone calls in a moment. Bob Franken is our guest for All Things Political. There have been a lot of people talking over the weekend, and the tone of the rhetoric, people are accusing the president of all kinds of things, that he's keeping us from knowing the facts, that a cover-up is going on here. This is the former director of National Intelligence, James Clapper, who, of course, was at that hearing. Was it last week? Everything's happening so fast. Maybe it was last week with Sally Yates, who had this to say on a Sunday talk show yesterday, and we'll take more phone calls in a moment. Brooke, thanks for yours.
I think in many ways our institutions are under assault, both externally, and that's the big news here, is the Russian interference in our election system. And I think as well our institutions are under assault internally.
Internally from the president?
Exactly.
Bob Franken is here now, a columnist and analyst on MSNBC, was on CNN for a number of years. He is a correspondent, a war correspondent, a political correspondent, has covered many presidencies, and we're taking your phone calls. Let's go to Mike in Iron River, Michigan. Hi, Mike.
Hi, thanks for the program, and thank you for the guest for coming on.
Yeah, a little bit closer to the phone, Mike. We're having
okay.
Hard.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, a little better.
All right. Anyways, I guess what everybody up here is discussing about is the country isn't working. And all of this stuff that's going on, I know it's important, but it's all east of the Potomac River. Nobody cares about the working class in this country, including the Democrats, which was evident with Hillary's campaign. What's going to change to get good Democratic leadership in this country?
Bob.
Well, the country is not working. I certainly agree with what he's saying. But let's go to, for instance, the changes in the health care plan. This is not just an east of the Potomac, an East Coast kind of problem. It is a problem that would, in fact, envelop the whole country. Millions upon millions of people, 20 million plus people, would lose their insurance according to the Congressional Budget Office. Most of them would have the, quote, pre-existing conditions that insurance companies were not allowed to charge more under Obamacare. That is not a problem that only affects the East Coast. That is a problem that affects everybody, and certainly including the people who live, as you do, in Michigan. The problem is that there are so many problems in the United States, so many problems that have been caused by self-serving and by manipulating the laws of this country to favor the rich, that we now have a big mess. Unfortunately, what is turning out is that Donald Trump is singularly unqualified to, in fact, do anything about those problems.
We've now reached the stage where this story, I'm sorry, but I just have to bring it up because I don't know how many people saw it. I know you did, Bob. But we have a president who is so concerned and keeps going back to his insecurities about probably losing the popular vote that he has this map, this colored map that has all the red counties. And there were a lot of red counties. He won a victory. I mean, it was an amazing thing. And he won. He's president, for heaven's sake. But he passes this out. It's in the West Wing now. He's got it framed. And he passes this map out to people who are visiting the White House. What in the world is that all about? Why would you do that?
Well, I think you just said it. This is a man who is grossly insecure and perhaps has to hearken back at all times as he's facing the reality that he's just not up to the presidency of how he was able to pull off the election. In effect, it's a rating system, and he hands out those cards as a way of saying, hey, look what I pulled off. Why would you question my qualifications for doing the job of president? The reality is, if you don't mind my being a barrack psychologist for just a second,
right,
is that he's insecure himself, that he doesn't feel like in his heart of hearts that he's really qualified to do the job.
Well, it's kind of course, it's weird, isn't it? Now we're analyzing how much ice cream he eats, too, because he gets a different menu. I mean, the whole thing is, oh, my gosh.
I hadn't heard that one, Kathleen. And are we analyzing his ice cream now?
We are. Evidently, he had a meeting with Time reporters last week, and they all had dinner with him, and they all noticed, and then I guess wrote about it. I haven't read the piece, but I've heard about it. I saw one of the reporters who said that he had a different kind of meal, so that he had different kind of salad dressing, Russian salad dressing, I'm sorry, but they had something of that.
That I heard about, yeah.
And then when he had ice cream with dessert, he got two big scoops of ice cream, but everybody else got one.
Oh, that's scandalous.
I know.
I mean, that news alone would overtake the Jim Comey investigation. Michelle Obama, he's not.
No, he's not. Mike, thanks very much for the call. Another Mike in Appleton this time. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Kathleen. I wonder if your guest...
Oh, Mike, your phone is really bad. Can you get closer or something? It's just cutting out.
Can you hear this?
Well, let's try. Just make it brief. I'm sorry.
Okay. I'm wondering if your guest could possibly provide a definition of treason and if collusion with the Russians to affect our election would be a treasonous act, and what, if it is, why is no one talking about that?
All right, Mike, we got that, I think. You got that, Bob?
I'm not an attorney, but I do not believe that in anybody's estimation this would be the kind of thing that would measure up to treason, which, by the way, is a capital offense, or it can be. That would probably suggest that Donald Trump was planning then to turn the United States government over to the Russians, not just to steal an election, if that's what happened with the Russians colluding with that. So I don't think that anybody would argue that this is really treason. As a matter of fact, I think that for the most part, people are not arguing that it would be provable obstruction of justice, remembering that intent is so much a part of the charge. Mm.
Leon in Adams County. Hi, Leon.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello, this is Leon here.
Hi, Leon there. Go right ahead.
Okay. You may have heard recently there have been clips showing Lindsey Graham saying that it's not appropriate to appoint a special prosecutor at this point in time because the present investigation is a counterintelligence or counterterrorism, whatever, investigation, not a criminal investigation. And until such time as there's actually evidence of criminal behavior, you don't have a basis for a special prosecutor. You got to wait and just complete this general counterintelligence investigation. How does that fit in? Does he have a point there, or technically, where are we on that?
You know, I was really surprised to hear Lindsey Graham say that. He's an attorney and apparently a very accomplished one. But of course, this is a criminal investigation. The charges, anytime you're involved in an intelligence investigation, you're talking about possible criminal acts. Anytime that the FBI would get involved in something like that, in a counterintelligence action, the decision would be, is there something that could be indictable? Is there something that would be a criminal act? One could argue against a special prosecutor. One could argue that, in fact, we should rely on a congressional committee or some other select committee of some sort. But we're talking about possible crimes here.
Thanks so much, Leon, for your call. We go to Catherine in Milwaukee. Hello, Catherine.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. I'll be real quick. The one question I have with regard to how we found out about Comey is, how did we find out? Was there a press release? Did he call Fox News and that's how we all got these alerts on our phones and television? There's no paper trail to how it even got communicated to the public. And then secondly, with regard to Comey himself and his actions in October, I don't think he did anything wrong. He is shown to have been a man of integrity. If we take it all the way back to Bush administration and what he did with Ashcroft when he was the attorney general. And so I think the Democrats as well as the Republicans got him wrong. He was simply doing his job. And the person that should have been under attack is the congressperson that ran out and had a press conference about a letter that should have been held in confidence that he sent to them, just informing, hey, I said to you I would look at this again. This is what I'm doing. There should not have been a press conference by Jason, whatever his name is, Yavish or whatever.
Yeah.
So that's my question.
Well, okay, first of all, in answer to your first question, the White House released the letter that it sent to Jim Comey. There is a paper trail. It started out the normal way that any announcement is made, momentous or otherwise, number one. Number two, there are two schools of thoughts in the way that Jim Comey handled the Hillary investigation. For starters, on July 5th, he infuriated the Republicans when he outlined this bill of particulars against Hillary, but said that they didn't reach an indictable level. And then, just a few days before the election, he informed Congress that he was reopening the investigation, thereby infuriating the Democrats. In reporting, there is a school of thought that if you've antagonized everybody, then you've done your jobs when you're, you know, covering
right.
a story. The other part is that you have done such a bad job that you have infuriated everybody for valid reasons. And the debate over Jim Comey's conduct during the Hillary Clinton investigation was that kind of thing. Now, it is entirely arguable, as Hillary Clinton believes, that Jim Comey's conduct right before the election swung the election in Donald Trump's favor. And that is a principal reason that she lost. So you can criticize Jim Comey for being somebody who cares more about his image than he does in maintaining the traditions of the FBI, particularly the ones that keep things quiet and confidential.
Thank you very much, Catherine, for your call. And let us go to Betty in Glendale. Hi, Betty.
Good afternoon. This morning I heard something very disturbing on your station, and it was about it was 6 o'clock news, and he stated that on the day after Comey was fired and Trump was entertaining the two dignitaries from Russia in the White House, that he didn't allow the American press in,
right,
only the Russian press, and that they hauled in an enormous amount of equipment. And the speaker found this very disturbing, as I did too. They claimed that they wanted to take pictures of the White House. Can you comment?
Anybody who goes into the White House goes through a serious security check. I'm somebody who went into the White House every single morning for a period of, you know, extended period of time. You go through that kind of check. When you go into the Oval Office, you go over even a more serious one. The complaint about not letting American journalists into the room when he was meeting with the Russian, I almost called him Soviet, the Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov, was that there would have been embarrassing questions from American reporters, no doubt about it. So he allowed only the Russians in, who shot the pictures and then put them out. And that was the only record that we had of the meeting. And, of course, the term that you've heard so often, is that this was just really bad optics.
Right.
You just fired the FBI director the day before, and there is rampant suspicion, confirmed ultimately by Donald Trump, that it was because of the, quote, Russia thing. The last thing you want is an agent of Vladimir Putin in the Oval Office the next day. It had all the appearance of them coordinating their stories and reporting back to the real president of the United States, Vladimir Putin.
Well, why would he have done that? I mean, he's not... There must have been a reason for it.
What
if
he's not?
I wasn't going to say it. But was he just flaunting the fact that, hey, I really have nothing to do with Russia, and so I'm going to be so brazen as to invite Henry Kissinger in and then these Russian journalists? I don't understand what he was doing.
Well, I'm going to put words in your mouth, and Kathleen.
All right.
You're going to say he's not a fool?
Right.
Well, I think that you get a lot of argument about that.
Really?
Maybe that is the answer.
Do you think?
I'm not going to express my opinion.
Hmm. Yeah, that one was hard to figure. Well, see what this week brings, I guess.
Oh, it'll bring something. I can tell you that.
Are you tired of all of it, or is it fascinating?
Are you kidding? It's the gift that keeps on giving.
Not a bit tired. Thanks, Bob, very much.
Thank you.
Bob Franken, our guest, a columnist, syndicated columnist, and he is doing political commentary for MSNBC, was a longtime reporter for CNN, covering the world, really, and the presidency, and got his first job in media in the state of Wisconsin. And he is also a graduate of the University of Wisconsin-Madison, as many of our guests are. It's amazing how many connections there are to Madison. Thanks so much to Colleen Leahy for producing this hour, and thanks to Lisa Nalbandian for doing our on-air production. We have All Things Political for those of you who are just listening every Monday at this time, and if you didn't have a chance to get on the air, we have pretty lively conversations going on our Facebook page as well, so feel free to leave your comments there because we all like to read them, and then we can disagree with each other or agree with each other. Whatever the case may be, that's the Kathleen Dunn Show. And if you like the page, then you'll be informed of upcoming programs as well. Stay with us. It's going to be a great book list. Some books maybe you never thought of that could be really important to the rest of your life. The author of The Leader's Bookshelf will be with us. And I'm sure that you'll want to write down some of these thoughts and maybe add to the list yourself after the news.